Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
As fighting between Israeli forces and Hamas continues in Gaza, there are growing fears that another potentially devastating war could erupt between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. Orla Geeran is senior international correspondent for BBC News. She has been at the Lebanese border with Israel and joins me on the line now. Good morning, Orla. Long time.
Yes, good morning, Philip. Nice to be with you.
Can you give us a little bit of a civics or a history lesson first, please, and tell us why is it that there has been no open conflict or border incursions, as it were, between Israel and Lebanon, or Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, for what is it, 18 years now?
Yeah, the last major war was in 2006. I was on the ground then. It was absolutely devastating for Lebanon. Large swathes of the country were bombed. A lot of destruction in South Beirut, which is a Hezbollah stronghold, and also in southern Lebanon, which is a Hezbollah stronghold as well. Now, the result of that war basically was a draw. Hezbollah fought the Israelis to a standstill. But in Lebanon, about 1,000 civilians were killed and a few hundred Hezbollah fighters. The death toll was much less in Israel. It was about 160, and most of those were soldiers. But both sides came away from that war having suffered a lot of damage, taken casualties, and also realizing that neither side could beat the other. And we've had some sporadic instances of cross-border fire, of rocket fire, and so on, of tensions rising over the years. But the real change has come since the Hamas attack on October 7th, when Hamas broke out of Gaza and killed 1,200 Israelis in a single day. Now, the following day, Hezbollah joined in attacking Israeli targets, firing from Lebanon, and said explicitly that it was doing this as what it called a support front for Gaza. And of course, both Hezbollah and Hamas are Iranian-backed and part of the so-called axis of resistance.
The other part of the equation here that is keeping the Israelis on the south side of that border is that Hezbollah has an enormous arsenal.
I think it's hard to overestimate how much damage they could do. And important to say, Philip, that they are a totally different, far more formidable enemy than Hamas. They are believed to be probably the most heavily armed non-state group in the world. They certainly have a lot more weapons than many nations. We're estimating here because obviously there is no full disclosure, but experts estimate that they have about 150,000 rockets, missiles, drones. Critically, some of those rockets are precision guided. They can reach targets deep inside Israel. Certainly, Israeli security experts believe that if there was to be open warfare between the two sides, then the damage that Hezbollah could do would be absolutely immense. And just a few days ago, the head of the Israeli electricity company said there was no guarantee that Israel would be able to maintain its electricity supply if an all-out war came. He said, in fact, it would be very easy for Hezbollah to take the national grid out of action. So this is a very different kind of potential warfare. The warnings from the UN, from the EU, from the US have been that this could basically be catastrophic. And of course, the fear is and the belief is it wouldn't just involve Israel and Hezbollah, but would drag in just from around the region, possibly embroil the United States, and Iran itself might intervene directly.
So as much damage as Hezbollah could do to Israel, you're saying as well that there is a cultural memory of what happened in 2006. I reported from there at that same time as well. I remember being struck by how the Israelis targeted everything from banks linked to Hezbollah, from water pumping stations and hospitals and schools that had even the most tangential connection with Hezbollah. So there was very, very little enthusiasm, certainly in southern Lebanon, for any kind of a conflict. Are you saying that Hassan Nasrallah and the Hezbollah leadership is conscious of its kind of its social license, its popularity in not escalating this conflict?
Well, two things on that, Philip. Certainly, Israel was heavily criticised by human rights groups after 2006 for damaging infrastructure rather than just focusing on military targets. And I remember in 2006, we had to walk into the southern city of Tyre, which was under Israeli attack. And we had to walk because the Israelis said they would fire at any vehicle that moved. And in fact, in the last 24 hours of that particular war, before the ceasefire came in, Israel carpeted many areas of Lebanon with cluster bombs. And this was documented by the UN. So there was certainly very, very heavy infrastructural damage, and that has left a lasting memory. And we also have to bear in mind that Lebanon has gone through crisis after crisis in recent years, not just the aftermath of the war in 2006, but also, of course, the devastating explosion in the port in Beirut in 2020. There's been an economic collapse, there's been political paralysis. So certainly many Lebanese have absolutely no appetite for another war. And it seems to be the war that nobody wants. Israel doesn't appear to want it. Hezbollah certainly says it doesn't want it. The indications that we have from Iran are that it also does not have an appetite for this conflict. And yet the danger remains, because day by day there are these exchanges taking place across the border, and all it takes is a miscalculation. If not by design, then by mistake, the fear is that this conflict could escalate.
Absolutely. An unacceptable number of civilian casualties on either side might propel people to escalate action. So you were on the ground with Irish UNIFIL commander Tom Fox. What did he tell you about what is happening, that kind of low-level kinetic action across the border day to day?
Well, they're very much in the front line of all of this, and they're patrolling day and night in areas very close to the blue line, which is the unofficial border between Lebanon and Israel. And in fact, they drove us through some of those areas, and most of the villages are completely deserted. People are long gone. I have to say, Philip, that's also true on the other side of the border. About 60,000 Israelis evacuated last October and have not been able to return. On the Lebanese side, it's about 90,000. But when we were in a UN patrol with Lieutenant Colonel Fox, we drove through villages where you could clearly see evidence of airstrikes. Buildings had been brought down, there was damage, there was rubble. But in a way, what was even more striking was how eerily quiet it was. It was just the complete absence of normal life. Nobody bringing in the crops, nobody coming in and out of houses, shops boarded up. And when we were at the border itself, Philip, we were within about 400 to 500 metres of a very prominent Israeli observation post. And I have to say, we were very glad we were standing there with the UN, because this is a very dangerous area. People just do not dare to move in that area. And while both sides, largely speaking, have been focused on military targets mainly, there certainly have been civilians killed, and there have been journalists killed by Israeli shelling when they were near the border. So it is not the case that civilians are exempt from what's going on.
No, but does it reduce the risk of an unintended consequence or escalation if, as you say, both the Lebanese and Israeli sides of the border have been largely de-civilianized?
To some extent, but that only holds true if both sides only attack in the border area. And there have been attacks that have been deeper inside Israel and deeper inside Lebanon. And there was a warning last week from the Hezbollah leader, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, that in his words, if Israel kept targeting civilians, then Hezbollah would attack locations that had not been attacked so far. Now, last week, there were 8 civilians killed in Lebanon, and 3 of those were young children aged 4 to 8. They were actually Syrian. Their parents were working on farms in the border area, and they were killed. So, you know, both sides have calibrated this until now, I would say, very, very carefully. It has been very carefully mapped out, carefully choreographed. But there is this potential all the time. And certainly the killing of civilians is one thing that by either side that could drive the conflict up to the next level. Everybody says they don't want it, but both Israel and Hezbollah say if it comes that they will fight to the death.
What are the calculations here in Tehran? Because I'm a little bit puzzled by the fact if there, that attack on Tel Aviv this morning was orchestrated by the Yemeni Houthis. Presumably that is something that is done with a degree of Iranian knowledge. Why are the Iranians urging restraint on Hezbollah?
It's hard to say if the Houthis would have liaised, as it were, with Tehran about that attack. Certainly they are backed and supported by Tehran, but it's not at all clear that Tehran controls every operational decision by the Houthis or indeed by any of the other militias, including Hezbollah, although there is a very close relationship between the two. I think the Iranians have been at pains to say in recent times that they do not want escalation. That's the public indication that's coming. That doesn't mean that various militias won't take action on their own, or indeed at the behest of the Iranians, but that the Iranians have this plausible deniability and they can say, well, it's not actually us who fired, it's the Houthis in Yemen. So, I mean, Iran's critics would say to some extent it's always playing a double game. It has these proxy militias at its disposal. But I'm not sure, Philip, that we can say that this morning's attack would have been, let's say, directed by Tehran, because I think striking in Tel Aviv with a drone is potentially something that could risk an escalation. And I think Tehran genuinely, for its own reasons at the moment, doesn't want to see that kind of escalation take place. I think the feeling overall is while nobody wants this, we could still wind up in that situation. And certainly the feeling in Israel and the opinion you hear from many is we've let Hezbollah grow too strong. They're a major threat on our northern border. If we don't deal with them, we could face an October 7th type event by Hezbollah at some point. The counter to that is warnings from people, even within the security establishment, that the potential consequences, not just for Lebanon, but for Israel, are hard to comprehend. I mean, the language used by the UN is a catastrophe beyond imagination. So certainly there's an acute awareness that if this was to happen, then the consequences could be truly dreadful on both sides.
I'm inviting you to speculate here so you can do so as tentatively as you want, but might it be in Benjamin Netanyahu's longer term interests to open up a second front? Because the longer that Israel domestically, politically, is in a state of war, the less chance there is of a political reckoning for him.
Well, that's exactly what his critics say, and many have been saying it for a very long time. I remember a headline in the early stages of the war in Gaza in the liberal Israeli paper Haaretz, and the headline was Saving Private Netanyahu. And there are many who believe that the Prime Minister's guiding principle is his own political salvation, is avoiding accountability, is avoiding elections. And while Israel remains in a time of war, then the reckoning is held off. So there are many, many critics of the Prime Minister, both inside the Israeli political system and among commentators and the general public, who believe that he's furthering the conflict. And indeed, every time there is almost a ceasefire deal. You know, we've seen a lot of false dawns. We've seen a lot of hope. It appears within reach. And then suddenly, as critics would say, Netanyahu is torpedoing the deal. And I should say, Philip, that Hezbollah have said very explicitly that if a ceasefire comes in Gaza, then as far as they are concerned, that's that. They will ceasefire immediately and without the need for further negotiation. Now, we don't know if that will be enough to satisfy Israel. Certainly, it would reduce the tension. But there have been statements, for example, from the Defence Minister, Yoav Gallant, saying that a separate deal would be required with Hezbollah. And we do know that at the very least, the Israelis want Hezbollah to push back from the border. They want a buffer zone. They want it harder for Hezbollah to fire. They want to push them back. And at this stage, there's no indication that Hezbollah is prepared to do that.
Okay, so uneasy stalemate reigns for the moment, but accidents can and do happen, as you say. Orla Gearan, Senior International Correspondent with BBC News. Thank you very much.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.